I'm Dan Givens. I'm the CEO of City Club, this fine institution that I'm so honored to be, so honored to be affiliated with. And it's days like this that I'm just especially honored to be a part of this organization as we continue to draw some amazing speakers, but also some amazing folks in the room, as we always like to highlight who's here, a little sampling of really who makes this city work from every different sector, and so many sponsors that also allow us to be able to share this platform with people like the treasurer and Ms. Besloss, who are able to use this to share their messages to make things a little bit better. So thank you to all of you for being here. And this is on behalf of Jackie, our board chair, Jackie Robinson-Ivy, and Omar Dagestani. Omar from Stiefel, our other board member, on behalf of our board, thank you for joining us, and really thank you to those sponsors. There's a host of them, so please allow me a couple of minutes to go through this list. They all deserve all sorts of applause, but please hold off to the end so we can hear our speakers. Northern Trust, JLC Infrastructure and Loop Capital, Amazon, Grain Management, LLC, Ulico, one of our main sponsors, Chicago Federation of Labor, the Office of Illinois State Treasurer, of course. Thanks for the work that you're all doing to support our wonderful treasurer. Rock Creek, of course, is here also. Marquette Associates, here in the middle of the room. Clayco is here. Thank you, Clayco. 2IM Group, LLC. Clear Lake Strategies. The Mid-America Carpenters, welcome back. And Erdu Werwas. Erdu, thank you. Thank you to all of the sponsors. We appreciate. As I mentioned, we appreciate the sponsorship. We also appreciate your membership. If you're not a member, please sign up, sign on. It's Chicago's most accessible club. We have memberships for every level, and there's so many great events coming. So many people come to one event, and they're not sure what we're all about. And then they understand there are different programs that may not seem at first to be of interest if it's not in your if it's not in your sector. But what's really interesting is when we get this diverse room of people who come to hear other topics that are not in their wheelhouse. So anyway, please become a member if you're not already one. I know there's so many members in the room, but come on back. There's a lot more to come, and we've got some great events coming up. And there are always, it's an amazing group every day that we're here in this room. And a good sampling of that, we've got Chancellor Miranda here from UIC. Thank you, Chancellor, a former speaker. Kirk Dillard, I didn't see Kirk, but I'm just mentioned his name anyway. So I think he's on his way with the Federation of Labor's table, I think, maybe. And Bob Ryder, I think they might be stuck in traffic or something. Tim Dre is here from the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you, Tim. Betty Lou Salzman is here. Adele is here. Adele Simmons, thank you for your leadership, all both of you, over so many years in philanthropy and in Chicago's civic scene. Michael Fosnock is here from Clayco, formerly a World Business, also a former speaker here. And I want to take this moment to mention, again, Clayco's always been supportive, and we just confirmed today that their founding chair, my former boss, Bob Clark, is going to be receiving an honor that City Club is going to feature at our amplification event on November 14th. So we're very excited about that, and there are a couple of more folks that we will be announcing soon. So you heard it here first, but put that on your calendar. It's going to be an evening event, second annual. It was a lot of fun last year. So please join us again on November 14th for that. I think that's all for our sponsors and so many great people in the room. So thank you. Jackie mentioned questions. We have a couple. We have a couple of them already, but please raise them in the air. We'll come and grab them and make sure that they get answered. I think that's all the housekeeping. So I'm going to ask the treasurer and Efsana to come on up. So Michael Frerichs, who many of you know in the room, is in his third term as a state treasurer, serving as the city's chief investment and banking officer. Joining him today is really a delight to have Efsana Beschloss with us, who's in from D.C. She's the founder and the CEO of Rock Creek, and she previously served as the World Bank's treasurer and chief investment officer, not a small gig. We're really honored to have both of you as you discuss investing in Illinois innovation, so much that there is going on in Illinois, and hopefully a lot more that we're going to hear about today. Again, please be part of this conversation with your questions, and welcome Treasurer Frerichs and Efsana. Take it away. Thank you.
Thank you, Don, for that incredible introduction. And for those of you who heard, I'm from Washington, D.C. That's true, but I'm married from somebody who's born and bred in Chicago and Illinois. So I have had all the tours. I've been to baseball games with my kids. I won't tell you which team. I have been, you know, we're going to talk about a lot about the first fund and what the treasurer has achieved. But so many of you in the room are such close friends. Raj Ajambadi, who is also producing some of the largest numbers of engineers, I think competing with Merlin here, but both of you, I think, produce some of the largest numbers of best engineers in the country. You've got Bill Atwood, you've got Dipesh Mehta, you've got Joyce Hackett, some of the best thinkers and innovators alongside. And, of course, I can't tell you how excited I am to be here today with Treasurer Frerichs, because he is of the, you know, I've worked on infrastructure globally when I was at the World Bank, and locally in the U.S., we work with many, many states from New York all the way to California. And I find he's one of the most innovative people that I have come across, and particularly in this position, which is a very complex position, and in a state that is uniquely positioned because you do produce the largest numbers of engineers in this country, because there is such a vibrant economic community. Look at everybody in this room and many others in Illinois. And also the fact that infrastructure is such a necessity, whether it is getting to the airport in O'Hare, whether it is all the great work that Yuliko does every day, whether it is the great work that many of you do, I think it stands to benefit even more for a lot that the treasurer is really doing. And if I may ask you, Treasurer Frerichs, since you took office in 2015, you have thought very differently than any other treasurer, at least that I'm aware of. You have created programs to invest in venture. You have revamped and rolled out the Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund. Can you tell us, like, what got you to do that?
So, yes, I want to start off by thanking everyone who's here today. I have so many friends who are in the audience, people I wanted to talk to. There wasn't enough time this morning, but thank you all for being here. It's so nice to see you here. I've come to City Club several times to talk about innovations, new things we've done in our office, but I remember I was sitting just about here around 10 years ago. City Club hosted a debate. And what I can say is the office that I run today is not the office I ran for 10 years ago. The office is very different. You know, 10 years ago, we weren't investing in Illinois venture capital. We didn't have an infrastructure investment fund. We didn't have a retirement program. We didn't have a program for people with disabilities. We've revamped unclaimed property. We completely overhauled our college savings, and we do things differently. And I'll confess something to people here in this room. Some people approached me to run for state treasurer. Before as treasurer, I was a state senator. Before that, I was a county auditor. So someone came and said, well, with your experience in government finance and in state government, you should run for state treasurer. And my response was, no, thank you. I think a trained monkey could do that job. I'm more interested in my work in the Senate. And that was a reflection of my lack of understanding of the office. You know, I thought, well, all you really do is you just put money in, buy treasury notes. That doesn't sound very exciting. And as a senator, I could deal with all kinds of variety of things. But there were a lot of people who kept talking to me, or I talked to people and they gave me ideas. I realized that, you know, one, I didn't really understand what the office did. And two, just what the office is doesn't have to be what it will always be. You know, one of my favorite things when I came into office and I talked to my chief of staff, I talked to my general counsel about things I'd like to do, the general counsel would frequently say, well, you can't do that. Why not? It's not in state statute. And I love that. As a former legislator, I had an answer. Let's just change state statute. And we can do things differently. So we've constantly been looking for new ways of doing things differently here. It's a big reason why I ran for office when I realized, one, I would be in charge of college savings programs. So we want to do things differently there. And two, we had a technology development account program that had sat dormant for at least 4 years, was a smaller one, and I thought we could do more there. And I credit a lot of this to the University of Illinois, the University of Illinois system chancellor. I represented Champaign-Urbana, and for years, the engineers, the computer scientists out of Champaign, they developed technology, they developed companies, and frequently, their companies left to the coasts. Now, part of that was the venture capital firms coming in from Silicon Valley or coming from New York or from Boston would come in and say, hey, we'd love to invest in your company, but the first thing you have to do is you have to move out to the valley. Now, there's no real reason they had to move there. There is an ecosystem out there that is conducive to entrepreneurs, but we have a lot of strengths here in the Midwest as well. And we found is when Illinois-based venture capital came down to Champaign and looked around, never did they say, you have to move out to California. It was the California-based VC firms want to be close to their investments. That's why they had them move. And so I think the answer was, if we help grow the venture ecosystem here in Illinois, we'll keep a lot more of our talent here in Illinois. And that was a big reason why I ran and one of the innovations that I am proud of. We'll talk about more things before we go much farther. Just want to let people know when you think, wow, he has a lot of good ideas. Just look around you. There's a good chance that you're seated near one of the employees in my office. And they have a lot of good ideas in addition to other people when I go out and talk.
I think that's a great point. This is a state that is both creative, but you also have been great in implementation, because creativity is wonderful. It's really how you implement that matters. So talk to us a little bit about when you decided to establish the first fund, which is quite large, over $1 billion, and you wanted it to be impactful and dedicated to things related to infrastructure and real estate. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, I'll first start by saying one of my favorite Bobby Kennedy quotes. He said, some people see the world the way it is and they ask why. I dream things never were and ask why not. And I really love that quote. And I wish I could say that was me. I wish I had those big dreams. I occasionally do. But I really believe that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Mm-hmm. And I like to be involved in associations, organizations, and travel around the state and talk to people, because that's where I get a lot of my ideas. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I'll give credit for the first fund, which is our infrastructure investment fund, to Tim Dre's predecessor. I was considering, people told me to consider looking at treasurer, and I had a good relationship with AFL-CIO and said, hey, Michael, someone said that I should run for treasurer. And quite frankly, I thought his answer would be, no. You are too valuable here in the Senate. We can't lose you for an office like that. His answer was, sure, you should do that. And I said, Michael, I thought you liked me here. Why do you want to send me off to Siberia as state treasurer? And he said, you could do things differently there. You could invest in infrastructure. And so he planted a seed with me years ago. Now, what I found was, first when I said this, you can't invest in infrastructure. You're not allowed to. So we started looking for models out there and, quite frankly, didn't find any around the state. But eventually, we got really close, and then COVID hit, set us back a little bit. We kept working, and a lot of our friends who helped pass this legislation are in the room here today, because we thought we could have a great impact. I saw investments in infrastructure, frequently by international pension funds or sovereign wealth funds were investing in U.S. infrastructure, and they were making money off of it. And so my answer was, well, why do we want to ship our money off to Australia? Why do we want to ship it off to the Netherlands or Canada? Why don't we keep it here ourselves? That was the impetus of the Infrastructure Investment Fund. We wanted to keep more of this money here. But we also know that when we invest in infrastructure in the state of Illinois, we put people to work. And we want to put people to work who are well-trained, who are going to complete projects on time and under budget, and our friends in organized labor do that. Now, we also think it is helpful for our business environment. You know, some people say infrastructure and they just think of roads and bridges. It is roads and bridges. It is our energy infrastructure. It is our schools and hospitals. It's our affordable housing. It is broadband. It's a lot of those things. And what they all have in common is businesses sort of rely on this. Either get their goods to their customers, to house their employees for transportation. And so I think by investing in infrastructure up to 5% of our portfolio, eventually about $1.5 billion, we can work with the private sector to make money for the state, to put our citizens to work, and make us more competitive. And I think that makes sense.
The other thing I think that you figured out in Illinois and you have worked a lot on is public-private partnership. Yeah. You did touch on that a little bit, but talk a little bit more in detail on how you see that being different. Obviously, when we look at all the biggest things that have happened, from the internet to the Tesla cars to many other things, it was always public-private, right?
Yeah.
That really allowed success and for the private sector to make a lot of money. How have you unlocked that?
So I said something earlier today. You know, if you hired Mike Ferrix to build your infrastructure, you voted for the wrong person. You should vote for my older brother. He's a carpenter. My older brother builds a lot of things in my house. We all have our different strengths, and building is not one of mine. If you voted for me because I was the person who picked the best projects, you also voted for the wrong person. What I see is the ability to help organize the General Assembly and our resources to put them with people and organizations who can find good deals that make us money. So I look out here in the room. Ulico was, I think, the first company we invested with. We've invested in
Rose Affordable House.
I see Nathan Taft here, a college classmate of mine. That's not why we invested in them.
Despite, make
that clear.
I was going to say it's despite.
despite a perceived conflict of interest. I look at Jim Reynolds over here. We're making an investment with Jim's company, along with some other good, interesting people.
And Magic Johnson.
Yeah, we're going to name drop.
Oh, sorry.
But yes,
sorry.
Irvin Johnson. And so we found, through our help with Rock Creek, mm-hmm. The other thing I have to tell people, someone asked me earlier today, well, you know, when Illinois politicians are giving out money, isn't that a recipe for, you know, a potential jail? How do you avoid that conflict? And we work with our partners. So we work with the private sector as well in PPP arrangements. But we also work with Rock Creek to help manage our funds, help bring ideas to us, to clear them. And so I think that, you know, if you can channel government dollars to work with the private sector, we can leverage those to a lot more investment in the state. We've seen that with our infrastructure, our growth and innovation fund as well. You know, we've put in over $700 million now in the state of Illinois. But those firms we've invested in have leveraged and brought others in. And together, you know, I think a study showed we've helped drive 19,100 new jobs here in Illinois. And we do this while making money for the state. It's important. There's a double bottom line here. We also are getting about an IRR of about 11.3%, which is far better than Treasury notes are paying these days, while at the same time putting people to work here in the state, making our state more competitive. And I have a great opportunity here as state treasurer. And I am so grateful to those who have given me this opportunity to do some of this innovation, those both the people who have supported me and the people in the office who make a lot of this work happen.
And I think, like you said, there is a lot happening in Illinois, and everything, at least going to my family origins here, is done in a low-key way. So sometimes it's hard, like New York, where, you know, everything is out there and people exaggerate. Here, it's almost the opposite. So how do you go about, obviously, we're very proud at Rock Creek to work with you, and we're very honored, and I think it's a really, you know, it's one of our most exciting things that we do on our, in terms of our day jobs. But you know, I was talking to Raj last week at his offices, and they're producing, you know, his students are producing new ways to create batteries and to avoid all kinds of negative things. There is so much going on in Illinois. How do you know, there's just huge amounts. How do you make sure that you take advantage of these great ideas and have that kind of venture environment that excites young people to move here?
Yeah, I think this is something I've been struggling with. I mean, you all read the Chicago Tribune, you read Cranes, and when a big company leaves Illinois, it gets about 5 headlines. When a company grows from 5 people to 500 people, no one knows who they are.
Right.
Now, I get part of that as the nature of media and conflict sells papers. But also I get that there are certain people out there in politics who think that they can gain something by running down their state. I try not to do that. I don't think it's productive. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, what we try and do is we try and highlight some of these success stories. So since starting this year, we're going out and meeting with some of the companies that receive funding through the state of Illinois and talk about their growth. Companies like Spot Hero, like Farm Fresh, other companies that we've invested in through our Growth and Innovation Fund, and try and tell their stories. And the hope is that some young entrepreneur is going to see that and say, well, look, they made it here in Illinois. Despite all this bad news I hear about the state, I can do the same thing. And if we get this large enough, people from other parts of the country might say, I see lots of innovation and creativity going on in Illinois. Right. Maybe that's the place I need to be. Especially like, you know, I think there's some people, some states who would like to be Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Let Silicon Valley be Silicon Valley. They do their own thing. They've already done their thing. And so I like to look at innovation, but you also look at your roots. Mm-hmm. What do we do well here? Well, one, we're very humble. We need to stop being quite so humble.
I agree.
Two, we've got a great tradition. We've got a great tradition with agriculture or food or manufacturing. And there are innovations going on in these old traditional industries as well that Illinois is leading on. And I think that if it makes smart investments there, we will see great growth in those areas. We don't have to develop a bunch of apps to just suck people's attention and steal their data. You know, New York, Silicon Valley can do that. New York can do their thing. Let's focus on our strengths here. And that's my advice to others, especially in the Midwest, who want to follow our lead.
So do no harm, do good, and make money.
Yeah, all good things.
So
make sure some people know something about this. And so that's part of the reason we're talking here today, because we don't talk enough about our successes and people don't hear them. I like to say that I have the best, least understood job in state mm-hmm. government. I mean, everyone knows what a treasurer does, don't you? The treasurer deals with money. Every organization you were part of, whether it be student council in high school, your church council, any organization, the AFL-CIO, has a treasurer. They all deal with money, but they all do sort of different things. We do a lot of good things for the state, but sometimes we take a little bit of time to make sure people know about them.
One of the companies you've invested in services batteries. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
I want to talk about lots of things. As I told you, I have the best job in state government. We have lots of great stories. We run out of time. Infrastructure, one of the things we look at is energy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the governor has rightfully identified quantum computing, I would say AI, as a place that Illinois can be a leader. But these things require a lot of power. Now, fortunately, we've had a great history here with our nuclear generation. We've had good, reliable power. The General Assembly has tried to make improvements in alternative energy. We think we can make investments in clean energy, part of that transition, to fuel these data centers that will put people to work here in Illinois. but one of the things we're looking to do with these... Sorry, I got off track there.
I was just wondering.
Oh, the battery.
The batteries. Because you are not just producing the next iteration of some new technology. You're actually invested in a company that today is servicing batteries, right?
Is servicing batteries. So the company Renuance, they help to recycle batteries and help through computer software to maintain the life cycle of batteries. And why is this important? Well, one, energy is so important. Energy storage is important. Two, it's a company that's based in Schaumburg. It puts people to work here in Illinois. But the components for batteries, something like 80% of the component materials are controlled by China. And that puts us at a real national strategic disadvantage. You know, they could really sort of shut off technology to us if things heated up there. Mm-hmm. But if we can get longer life out of our batteries, if we can recycle, reuse these batteries, it makes us more energy independent. And so some of the work they're doing out there is great for Illinois jobs. Absolutely. It's great for our bottom line. This is not something that's just an idea. It's already making money. But then three helps us out globally as well.
You've also invested in something that is, I think, very important, I'm sure the heart and minds of a lot of people in the room, which is sadly, fast internet to low-income areas and students.
I just want to say, Michael told me before this started that he'd have to leave, and people think, like, wow, why is he walking out in the middle of the speech? He prepped me in advance.
Good. Yeah. So going back to a company you've invested in, Crosstown Fiber, where, you know, it is a typical example of what you talked about earlier, which is this private-public partnership where a lot of money is made to make this successful, but also, very importantly, it brings fast internet to schools. And that's critical, right, for the development of everything we talked about.
It is critical for the students in those schools. We're going to bring fast internet to about 300,000 students on the south and west side of Chicago. We're going to make money doing that. We're going to use union labor to put that in. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good there.
Right.
If you look at what it takes to be successful today, I mean, close to be part of the economy, whether it be smartphones or your smart refrigerators, mm-hmm. your smart lighting in your house, it requires access to good broadband. And as you lay that backbone of that dark fiber throughout the south and west side of the city, it's going to provide much easier connection to underserved areas that have been bypassed in the past. And I get that. When internet was expensive to put in, companies were looking for places where people had more money. I get that. I look back to my grandfather, who grew up on a farm in downstate Illinois. Electricity was invented and wires were strung first in cities. And some company made a decision, well, it just doesn't make economic sense to run wires to my grandfather's farm out there. But as the technology advanced, it just made a big difference in his quality of life. He remembers when electricity was brought to his farm, because then he grew up on a dairy farm. You'd have to wake up every day and get your milk and take it to market or so. With electricity, they could have cooling. It just made a big difference in their life. And I know some people have backgrounds from a similar part of the state. But that took the federal government mandating rural electrification. FDR did this. And so I get that some areas were bypassed because they weren't as profitable as others. But I think now as it's become ubiquitous, we need to do what we can to make sure that everyone has access to this technology to succeed. And so another positive outgrowth of this investment. And thank you for bringing that to us.
And thank you for also investing with Nexamp, which is another company, right, that does exactly what you said, i.e. it brings energy, clean energy, to those rural areas, right? So exactly what your grandfather would have liked in the sense that it is, but it's doing it in an economic way. So I think it is amazing, right, in the sense that you're covering, you know, internet, you're covering energy, you're covering energy transition, logistics. Did you want to tell us about what you're doing on the biggest, one of the biggest
inland ports? Yeah, that's another investment we've made through our first fund. Mm-hmm. You know, another strength of our areas is we're situated in the middle of the country. We have access to world-class airports. If you look at rail traffic, most all cross-country rail traffic comes through or around Chicago. If you look at interstate miles, we have a great system interstate. And so there are a lot of companies looking to put their warehouses or logistics here in Illinois. And so we're helping grow one of the largest inland ports in America that's putting people to work in good jobs. This is what we're all about. So I was trying to find those opportunities. Now, I think that the government has a role to play, with the private sector. So I look at our state government and the federal government, and they've given incentives. The federal government through the Inflation Reduction Act, CHIPS Act, a variety of different things to incentivize certain behaviors. The private sector is looking to benefit from those, especially in clean energy. You see a lot of investment. And we can leverage our dollars along with them to be part of this transition that brings more opportunity for more people out there. You know, it reminds me of a conversation I had when I came into office with our investment manager of our college savings plans. I came in and looked at the programs, and it was clear that the people benefiting from our 529 programs were overwhelmingly wealthy and overwhelmingly white. Okay, I traveled around the state, and this is a great big diverse state. And I found like a lot of people that I asked votes for weren't necessarily benefiting from these. And so I asked our investment manager, what are we going to do to bring in lower income, working class families to help them save, more diverse families? And I was told, well, you know, they're really expensive to reach. Can't make as much money off of them as you can. I mean, it just makes sense. You could make more money off of servicing one $100,000 account than $1,100 accounts. Same amount of money, but it's more work on their part. And I said, okay, well, that makes sense to me. I said, but I didn't run for office to make the wealthy wealthier. I ran for office to give more opportunity to more people. And they looked at me and said, well, we realized we followed you on the campaign trail, and you want to make a change. You're probably going to fire us anyway, so why should we spend any money? I said, oh, you listened to me on the campaign trail. You're right, I did say I was going to make a change. The change can be that we're going to help more working class families, and we're going to help more minorities families save for college. And then I can run for re-election saying I changed the program. Or you can fight me on this, and I will make a change. And we did make a change. And So I tell that story because we look for, you know, are we giving more opportunity to more people? People who traditionally weren't part of the system. People who weren't able to secure government contracts in the past. And I think when you look at our record there, we've made great changes.
Well, in the first program, I think more than 50% has gone to women and people of color. So that may not, you know, be necessarily representative of the population, but it's a lot more than most other places.
If you look at our Illinois Growth Innovation Fund, we've not topped 50% yet. We're about 47% in diverse managers. But if you look at venture capital industry as a whole, it's overwhelmingly white. It's overwhelmingly male. Right. And so I think getting up to 47% is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in California, it's still a big problem. And starting today, it's even harder. I think given the rhetoric out there, it's even harder for people to start.
It's harder, but because of that, I think it's even more important to do it. Because I talk to a lot of companies out there who believe in diversity, inclusion, but they say, I don't know if it's worth the risk. I don't know if it's worth the cost. You know, because if we do this, if we have this program, there's going to be a backlash, there's going to be a lawsuit, we've got to defend it. And so I think it's the responsibility of government to stand up and defend this. You know, we do this not necessarily because it's the right thing to do. I mean, I do think it's the right thing to do. We do it because if you look at studies, it shows diversity is good for business. It's good on corporate boards. If everyone has the same background, if everyone has the same education, the same cultural background, what you get around the boardroom table is a lot of, yes, that sounds right. That's exactly the way I think. If you get people from different backgrounds, you're much more likely to question decisions. You're much more likely to see opportunities that someone from a different background wouldn't see. Why wouldn't we want more of this? And people ask me, well, why do you care so much about diversity? And I'll say, well, one, I think it's good for business. Studies have shown that. Two, I'm a product of diversity. I'm a diversity hire. No one's laughing. I says someone earlier, and I mean this. I got into college. I did well in school. I did well on my tests, but I feel very confident. I got in because Yale didn't have a lot of poor farm kids.
Right.
They didn't have people like me, and they took a chance and said, "No, from Illinois, from a small town. My parents didn't go to college. I don't know anyone from my high school had gone to Yale before, and so they took a chance." Because they thought, well, you know, if we get someone like from his background, along with the kids from Andover and Exeter and the kids from New York City, they'll all learn from each other. You know, if everyone has the same background, we don't have that much to teach each other. And I've also brought that attitude in addition to just creating more opportunity, mm-hmm. make sure there's more opportunity for more people who traditionally have been excluded.
It's interesting you say that. It's we did a study with the World Bank a number of years ago, just before COVID, and looked at 700 private equity firms. Mm-hmm. We looked at gender. This was in developing countries, so that was the diversity. And companies, funds that were balanced, meaning at least because you want balance. You don't want only one or another kind of person. You don't want 100% women. If you had 30% of one gender at least represented, you had 20% higher return. This is 700 funds over 20 years, real data. So this is, as you said, it's doing, it's how do you make more money? And I think what is interesting often, and I think, you know, you want to move away from the programs and have these be part of the main programs, not separate programs for this group or that group, but to have it as part of the, what Ed Smith and you and I used to call, you know, we don't need to be in the children's table. You want to be at the same table as everybody else.
Grown-up table.
So, again, going back to innovation and technology risk, obviously you do both because you look at early companies, right?
Yeah.
And then you look at infrastructure where there is no technology risk. When you look at, you know, that's sort of looking across both. You create new businesses, and then you invest in existing businesses that have been de-risked from a technology point. Do you look at that in any particular way, or do you try to connect the dots on these?
So I'll tell you how I look at it, and I'm going to ask you how you look at it.
Okay.
And I'll ask you because you're our manager here, and it's a question mm-hmm. I have. But I would say, like, something like the energy transition. Mm-hmm. If we're going to power all these data centers, if we're going to power quantum computing that the governor has put a lot of time and effort and energy into attracting to Illinois, we're going to need more power. We're going to need clean power. And so I think, one, you want to take technologies that already exist and help fund them to scale. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what the first fund should do. But we also think there could be new breakthroughs that people, no one's imagined yet. They're going to power these places in the future, and so we want to invest in innovation as well. So my question for you is, when, you know, people come to me and ask, like, hey, would you fund my company? I say, well, I'm not the fund. I fund the fund here, and we send them your way. How do you view that difference between, you know, innovation and investment risk?
Really excellent point, Michael. The way we look at it is, let's say, when it comes to technology risk, you have to invest in lots and lots of areas to be able to sort of, one, hopefully be good.
They won't all pay off, but when they pay off well, they pay off well.
So as an example, we invested with Y Combinator, which is an accelerator, which I hope that you will do a better version of here, in Illinois. And Sam Altman came to introduce the fund to us at the time. And then 3 weeks later, he came back to say, I'm leaving the fund to start OpenAI. Yeah. The rest is history. At that time, to be honest, when he came and said, I'm allocating part of the money I just raised from you in OpenAI, we thought, you know, that's gone.
Yeah. Have you realized a return?
And it is still in that portfolio at cost, which was very little.
Yeah.
So that is like transformative in terms of return, right? When it comes to investing across, we see the highest bang for the buck being in what we call growth stage, mm-hmm. where companies have been de-risked from a technology point, and they're growing super fast. And they need capital to grow. And I think that's another area that you've worked on. And then once they're all completely established, you need the infrastructure. Infrastructure provides lower, you know, slightly lower returns than these two areas. But you need it. Otherwise, we won't be able to get around, right? Yeah. So you need all three. All three need to be present. So I think that is one of the things I've admired about your program, because you're looking at all of them. Because if you do one or the other, I don't think you succeed. But when you do the transformative investments and you do the growth stage to help them grow, and then you build the infrastructure around it, that's when you have an economy that can really be different.
Yeah. I can't solve all the state's problems. I can't fix everything out there. But what we can do is sit back and quarterback and see where our strengths are. You look at our universities. We produce great engineers. you know, a statistic I cited a lot to help people understand this when I was a senator from Champaign is the University of Illinois produces more engineers every year than Stanford, MIT, Caltech combined. People don't realize like what this is a great thing for the state of Illinois. It's a great resource. Then you throw in our other universities. We produce lots of engineers. Too many of them move out of state. And so we looked and said, well, where is the problem here? And so if we can deploy some more capital in Illinois to help those engineers, help those entrepreneurs grow their companies here, it's a double bottom line return for us. You know, I'm a little different. When we invest the state's funds, you know, as a fiduciary of a pension fund or so, you know, your primary responsibility should be the plan participants. With the state's dollars, I can get a return on investment and help grow companies here that hire people, that pay income taxes here. It's a double win for the state of Illinois.
So when you started the FIRST program and your program to also invest in innovation and really seeding a lot of new companies, you were unique. Now, where we are, do you see anyone following you? Are you advising, mentoring other state treasurers or others to do what you're doing?
Yes. So I will say this to you and to my staff. I've said to my staff before, you know, we're the trailblazers here. If we do this right, other people are going to follow our lead. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be more investment in our country. We think that's a good thing. If we do this wrong, you will set this back for generations. Everyone will say, well, I know you're thinking about investing in infrastructure, but look at the flame out Treasurer Frerichs. Well, so far, so good. We don't have to worry about that.
So what is top of mind today as we
I guess I should say, so there are other states that are looking.
Yes.
We've talked with them. They've talked with my staff. We've especially seen this in our Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund, which we really ramped up about 8 years ago. And now North Dakota, Wisconsin, Indiana are following our lead. If you look at their enabling legislation, some of it very closely mirrors ours. And when I talk with treasurers or other people from those states, my advice is, you know, don't try. You can follow our blueprint, but don't try to be Illinois. Just as we didn't try to be Silicon Valley or New York or Boston, find out what your strengths are and amplify those strengths. And so that's what I think people should do.
Should do. So following up on that, given where you are today and given, you know, how much you have, you know, how far you have come, all these great investments you've done, and it's not just investments that, you know, money has moved already. A lot of them are producing jobs. A lot of them are actually getting built out. A lot of them are getting implemented, which is more than most people could say. What is the next thing you're thinking about?
The next thing I'm thinking about, well, in the short run, you know, we look at things like the Inflation Reduction Act, where the federal government is putting either money or incentives, and we look for opportunities there. So we have thoughts there. You know, we look at our logistics in Illinois and manufacturing and opportunities there. We talked a little about the energy transition and access to broadband. We look for opportunities there. But we're always open for other new innovations. Well, I am always open. My legislative team sometimes thinks that I have too many ideas, and it's a heavy load. But I've got a great staff. You know, when you say, you did this, I have to clarify a little bit of imposter syndrome here. We did this. We did this together. And but I look, and I want to be broad here as well. So my staff is really good about that. We also have partners that we work with to help us do this. And then we have our partners we've worked with to get here to this office, who've either helped me get here, and I'm very grateful for that, or gave me ideas. Like the FIRST Fund is a result, in my mind, of the AFL-CIO. And I want to thank you guys. And then, so the very first investment was made with ULICO, Union Labor and Life Insurance Company. Sorry, I know it's ULICO, and I know it's an acronym. My apologies for butchering it.
And a great group, and they've done really well from Illinois to the Kennedy Airport. So, I think we're going to go to Dan for your questions, right?
And I'll just mention
you're so good about incorporating a couple of these questions that already came in. So I just want to mention, we always appreciate your questions. Clayton Harris had asked about the 529 funds, which I know we addressed.
Oh, I'll say one other thing. So we came in, we innovated, I talked about that, but we don't stop. So we found a new investment manager, but 8 years later, we were looking and saying we think we could do better. And so we're actually right now, our conversion goes live today, working with TIAA, dropped fees by another 13%, expanded our investment lineup in a better way, I think. And also, there'll be a better website interface, and for the first time, an app. So that for those of you who don't sit in front of a computer all day, and like me, you're on the road, if you want to make a contribution to your kids' 529 program, if you want to send a note to the grandparents or aunts and uncles that they should make a contribution, you'll be able to do that from your phone now. So we're always looking to innovate, not just in infrastructure and our innovation fund, but all of our programs.
Different infrastructure.
And I want to hear from Joan Hoosen from Gartner Research and Advisory. What tools will the Office of the Treasurer use to measure success of the IGIF, of the fund? What resources will you offer to fund recipients to ensure that they're optimizing and successfully investing their awarded funds? So how are you measuring this and making sure that it's being invested properly?
Yeah, so I'd say with our Illinois Growth and Innovation Fund, the three probably big metrics we look at are rate of return. And to date, it was earlier this year, it was an IRR of 11.3%. We look at impact in terms of jobs. And to date, studies showed about 19,100 new jobs. But we also look at opportunity out there. And so that 47% invested with diverse managed firms is also a big thing for us.
Great, and you also did touch on this, but maybe dive a tiny bit deeper from John David Willingham from Pace Healthcare. How are you supporting emerging managers, particularly diverse and women-led?
Yeah, so emerging managers, this is one thing when I came in. You looked at our asset managers, you looked at our broker-dealers, diversity level. About 1% of all of our transactions for broker-dealers were done through diverse-owned firms when I took office. And so we went out and we asked, why not? Why aren't you participating? And quite frankly, heard was, oh, we've tried in the past, and we were told no. I think back, I like chocolate chip cookies. And as a kid, I'd come home from school, my mom had chocolate chip cookies, I'd put my hand in the cookie jar. Well, mom would say, no, that's for after dinner. Well, I was stubborn, and so I'd go walk into the living room and then sneak back around, put my hand in the cookie jar, and she'd slap my hand again. No. Those are for after dinner. And eventually, she slapped my hand enough times, I just stopped putting my hand in the cookie jar. Same things with a lot of diverse-owned firms. They would apply, and they'd be told, sorry, you don't have enough experience. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you don't have enough clients. Sorry, you don't have enough assets under management. It was kind of a modern-day economic Jim Crow. Like, well, how am I supposed to get the experience? How am I supposed to get the assets if no one will work with me? And so we found we had to do is we had to go out and, like, actually, be ambassadors and tell people there's a new sheriff in town. We're doing things differently, and it's worth your time to apply. And then, two, because they didn't have experience working in the state, sometimes state regulations, state forms and procedures can be difficult to interpret if you haven't used them before. And so we had someone whose job it was to help them with the process. And when we did that, we went out and actively invited people to apply and help them with the process. We've gone from about 1% of diverse-owned firms, minorities or women, veteran or disabled-owned firms, to now over 75%, which is more in line with
the population.
Population in the state. With our asset managers, we've grown from less than 1% to over 40% now. But it was intentional. You have to go about it. If you just sit back and wait and say, there are a lot of pension funds out there that say, well, we'd love to work with more diverse firms, but there just aren't any. Depeche, I'm not looking at you. It's not ISBE. But there are funds out there that say, they just don't apply. Well, if you sit back and just wait for someone to come, someone who's never worked in the past, who's been told no several times, you're probably not going to find them.
Not to put words in your mouth, but I think one of the reasons also your team and you decided to work with Rock Creek is we have one of the biggest databases of diverse companies and funds. And it's something we are proud about, but we didn't go looking for diversity. We went basically for the best of the best, but we did what you said, which is we did not exclude. And it's very data-driven database. So you look, when we look at the database, you look at, you know, I'm looking at infrastructure, funds that are investing in X or Y, and then you sort of derive that list. And then you can impose other constraints. You know, I want them to be, you know, investing in Illinois or invest, you know, women-owned or black-owned or Hispanic. And then that list is based on the best of the best. Yeah. And we think that that's the way to go about doing this. And that is why at Rock Creek we've invested more than $8 billion since we started Rock Creek in black and brown, women-owned, and other other minority groups. And the returns have been strong. And last but not least, you know, one of the firms you've also invested in, we didn't talk about, Grain, is one of the most successful black-owned investment firms that does telecoms infrastructure. So there are great firms across every area, and the question is not to exclude.
No. I tell people I like to fish where no one else is fishing.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people, if you go to a new lake or a new pond and you ask, well, where are the fish biting? Okay, everyone knows the fish are biting. Right over there, you see all those boats over there? And people will get in their boats and they'll go there because, well, obviously that's where the fish are biting. That's why everyone's there. Well, there's a whole lake, and there's got to be fish there. I like going somewhere where there's less competition. I mean, if you look at the south and west side of Chicago, there aren't a lot of companies and managers looking to invest in the southwest side. But there's still entrepreneurs there. Yeah. And we have less competition when we invest there.
Well, this is all music to our ears. This is Chicago, that's City Club. You know, the diversity, not only demographics, but the various sectors. And it was a great story of the ecosystem. You know, the universities preparing the students that become the future leaders, the companies that are investing in those universities, that are investing in those, all the institutions, it all works together to provide opportunity, as you mentioned.
Can I make one last closing
statement? Please,
it looks like Dan's wrapping up here, but when we talk about innovation, I think innovation, frequently people think about technology. Innovation can also be different ways of doing things. You know, when I came into office, we can help people save for college. And every parent wants the best thing for their children, but sometimes their children have pretty severe disabilities and their options are more limited. But parents want a brighter future for them as well. But because federal benefits are tied to your income or your assets, a lot of parents were forced to leave their children in poverty in order to qualify for their federal benefits. And the federal government innovated here and created the ability to have ABLE accounts. It stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience, allowing people with disabilities to save up to $100,000 in an ABLE account, which is a 529 account, works like a college savings account, without losing their federal benefits. That was very innovative. And thanks to the work of a friend of mine who was a state senator, we passed that legislation. But when we went out to the market, to investment managers, and said, hey, would you like to work with us on this savings program for people with disabilities? We heard crickets. Like, no one wanted to work with us.
Wow.
So we asked questions. Well, why? We found out, well, We've grown our college savers from about $350,000 to over $900,000. We've grown it from $7 billion in assets to over $20 billion in assets. So these are big numbers for investment firms. We're not going to have 900,000 savers with disabilities. They're not going to have account balances in the scores of billions of dollars. And so they said, well, it's too small. It doesn't really work for us. It doesn't interest us. And so we got together with other state treasurers in smaller states and said, found the same thing. And once again, not my idea, but by getting people together and listening and convening, we got the idea, well, what if we all work together? And so Illinois led a consortium of 8 states. We went out for RFP, and the winner would have access to all 8 of our states. And because we were like the largest state in the country combined, we got the best deal. And we've now grown that consortium to 20 states, or maybe 19. We're trying for 20. 19 states out there. And so it's things like that, just by thinking differently. No one had done this before in college savings programs. No one had done it in ABLE accounts. But because we weren't bound by history and what had been done before, and we thought differently. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of families now are going to pay a lot less in fees so their kids can have a brighter future.
It's amazing.
That's innovation. Yep. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. That's innovation, that's infrastructure, and just a different way of thinking about it. So thank you for that. Thank you for all of your efforts. My son was caught yesterday in the cookie jar very many times, and I'm still going to invest in his 529. And if he turns out anything like you, I will be a very proud parent, even though he did learn how to innovate around getting to that cookie jar. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for all your efforts. This has been enlightening. It's so much more than investing in treasury notes, as you mentioned. So thank you. I encourage everyone here to share this video. We'll have a video up tomorrow. And if there's anyone else that you want to share this who may not have been in this room, what an incredible explanation of what you do and all the hard work that your staff does as well. Afsana, thank you so much for being here. We hope you'll come back. You're welcome anytime. Of course, your husband, Michael, also, as I said at lunch, is welcome back. Our nation's premier historian, and also looking to the future with the history that we've all learned.
And can I just say one
please
more
time, do,
honored
please.
I am to be in Illinois, in Chicago, and to all my friends here and the treasurer for the opportunities to work here. I think a lot of you who are around here today have given us that opportunity, and there's no way to thank you because it means a lot to me and my colleagues. So thank you.
It means a lot to us.
And us at City Club. So it's all about partnerships and getting together and doing things like this, talking with each other and making this city and state move forward. So thank you again. Thank you for being here. Come back. We've got a program coming up October 8th on teens and social media, trying to reduce gun violence. October 24th, equitable cancer care and research with a number of folks, including Mayor Johnson. And then, of course, I mentioned our November 14th event. Put that on your books. But keep an eye out for our emails. We've got some exciting programs coming soon. A couple that may not be in this room as we venture out and do some more interesting things. Again, thank you. Enjoy this beautiful Chicago day. Thank you, Treasurer Frericks. Thank you, Afsana Beschloss. An honor to have you here.
I'll say, if anyone liked the things we talked about today, we put out a weekly newsletter, email newsletter, where we talk about a lot of our programs. Feel free to sign up.
Please do. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.